Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
You do come away with guilt. There's no question, as parents particularly. Gosh, you know, as a dad, your job's to protect your kids. Okay, you know, he's 34 years old and arguably not a child, but equally, yeah, you do feel that.
And I think in a world where it's very easy just to quickly click on a petition, or it's very easy to click like or share or retweet and then think, well, that's me, I've done my bit. What you've talked about there is actually people going beyond that.
I think I was asked on another event I was speaking at yesterday, a panel discussion, what surprised me most this year about people. Firstly, it surprised me just how many people are going through this, both bereaved by suicide, struggling with ideation and struggling with mental health generally. It's just something I wasn't aware of.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Hey, welcome to the podcast this week. Great to have you with us on this week's Mental Health Monday. Welcome to everybody who's listening for the first time. If you want to be part of Mental Health Monday, subscribe, download the podcast each and every Monday and be part of this wonderful community that we've been able to create through the show, through talking through people's experiences, signposting to some wonderful services, and another brilliant service we're going to signpost to you to today, a project undertaken by a guy called Steve Phillip. Details on the way in terms of Steve, who he is, and how you can get involved in supporting him. Just wanted to flag, though, the Mental Health Monday Facebook group is now up and running. So if you want to be part of that, brilliant, please do. Just apply. I'm just going to accept you. There's no application system. But you have to sort of either get invited or apply to be part of it. I'm in charge of controlling who's in. If you're listening to the podcast, that's good enough for me. You can use that as an opportunity to share the work that you're doing. If there's an event that you're involved in, or there's something that you want to talk about in terms of a topic which you think might be a future edition of the program, link to a news article or something like that, absolutely get involved in the Mental Health Monday Facebook page. Now, it's not a service for people who are struggling, but there are links on there for people who might need some support as well. Links to places like the Samaritans, to the Hub of Hope, and of course to call 999 if you need to. So it's not monitored 24/7, and I'll make that absolutely clear in terms of what it can be used for. But if you are an organization or you want to flag up a particular issue through a news article or an event, let us know. We'll post it on the group and you can be part of it too. Thanks to everybody who's been listening to Mental Health Monday. We've had a really, really positive response to the last few months, actually, have been really, really spot on. And I really appreciate everybody who shares on social media that they've been listening to Mental Health Monday with the hashtag Mental Health Monday. We'll continue to get these podcasts out each and every week. Steve Phillip is a guy who lost his son, Jordan, to suicide. And he's our guest on this week's show. Steve's an incredible guy and speaks so well on the subject. He launched an event this week, which will see a year of events culminating on December the 4th, for reasons which Steve will explain. The Jordan Legacy is the name of the project, but the wider project he's opened up just this last week is Hope for Life UK. Now, I'll get all the links to this in the social media poster and also to the links within the podcast on Audio Boom as well. But Hope for Life UK, fingers crossed, will make a big difference to many, many people's lives. And you could be part of it too. All the details are on the way. First up, though, Steve set out his journey that he'd been on and the story of Jordan and how the Jordan's legacy was set up.
Yeah, thank you, Mick. Just briefly, kind of my background, I'd worked in consultancy and training for a good number of years, ran my own business for over 11 years, and was actually leaving a client in the Midlands on December the 4th of 2019, and remember it very vividly at 4:22, just as I was sitting back in the car and put my phone on the dashboard, and an incoming call came from Charlotte, who is Jordan's girlfriend. Not someone who would call me fairly regularly, so I thought unusual. But anyway, that call that I remember recording, and at 2 minutes of duration, much of that probably in silence, was to tell me that she'd got to my son's house, Jordan's house, and found he'd taken his own life. And from that moment onwards, kind of the world changed dramatically for me. Jordan, at 34 years of age, took his life. He'd was someone who, she's going to sound very stereotypical, a much loved son with a huge network of friends, but that would be to do him a real injustice, because as I was to learn, I think, in the subsequent weeks, such was the network of friends that he had, and what they thought of him, and different groups of friends from his university days to where he lived in Leeds, from where he's brought up in Morecambe, and overseas friends where he visited and worked as well with close friends. Out came a story of a lad who was hugely loved by so many people, but equally was someone that gave of himself enormously, very much on the quiet, I would say, to so many of those friends when they were in need. And so few of them knew of his battle with depression. He was clinically diagnosed in 2015 and experienced episodes. Never any indication to anyone, including his family, that there may be any sort of suicidal ideation there at all. So when it happened, it was a total shock, even though we knew he was struggling. But someone who functioned, had a really important job with the Independent Office of Police Conduct. He had worked in the Home Office before that. So a highly functioning, much loved, good looking young lad with kind of everything to live for, really. So in kind of 2 minutes, that's kind of Jordan that we're talking about, really.
In terms of that, and your and the family's understanding of how things escalated to the point to which they did, what was that journey like in terms of, you're obviously aware of the diagnosis there of depression, but you're also aware of the good, strong networks, friends that he maybe had as well. So was that a journey in and of itself to get to a point where you could understand how Jordan had got to that point?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because if we understand the kind of dynamics of the family, Charlotte, his girlfriend, who's just had to put her studies on hold at university at that time, has now successfully completed and put in and passed her thesis to become Dr. Charlotte Heathcote and a clinical psychologist. So Jordan was living with a clinical psychologist, they weren't living together, but spent a lot of time at Jordan's house together. His mother, a senior mental health nurse of many years. So we had a family connections that clearly understood the dynamics and issues around mental health. And a dad who didn't understand, really. So my ex-wife and Jordan's mother, we would talk regularly about the fact Jordan was struggling. She was understandably maybe more concerned than I was. I can remember having conversations where I'm thinking, look, I've just spoken to him. He seems okay. He seems, I've just had a chat with him, and maybe worrying more than you need to was, if I didn't verbalize that was certainly in my head. Now realize she worried with good reason. So so to get to that point, I think we understood that he'd struggled in 2015. He came to live with his stepmom and I for a period of time there, she did a phenomenal job in getting Jordan back on his feet as well, with a lot of other support. And he went out into the world, but every so often we knew he would have these episodes, but they were never extreme, until probably the latter part of 2019, where he was really obviously struggling. And that's where we all started to get more concerned for his mental health and supporting him. Again, not in a million years did we think what was going to happen, would do. So the signs were there. Retrospectively, the signs are very clearly there now. I'm not going to be the first person to have said that, but when I'm receiving WhatsApp messages, saying, not doing too well, Dad, probably the first time in all those 5 years he'd ever really come out and said that. I'm not sleeping well, struggling, with my sleep. Or jokey comments we might have between us. Well, at least I managed to get up and have a wash and a shave this morning, Dad. And my reaction was, we'd have a bit of banter about that, because I wanted to be Dad. If we went for a beer every so often or a concert, I didn't want to be the dad that was continually interrogating him about his mental health. We didn't get, even though he didn't live that far away, he was a very private individual in many respects. So we wouldn't have those conversations really at all, other than the general, you know, how are you doing, and kind of leaving it at that. So it was an interesting journey for me, mate, because, you know, say retrospectively, I can look back now and see the signs very clearly, and know exactly what I would be saying to myself now in terms of what I needed to do about that. So, yeah, so it's been an interesting pathway, really.
And I think, you know, it's interesting there, you know, with the connections that people add to the mental health world and the understanding as well. It's a theme that's come up just even last week on the program, you know, with Alex George, who was an A&E doctor, you know, an older brother figure, lost his younger brother to suicide. And a sense that, you know, we thought we had that sort of thing boxed off because of our knowledge. But I guess, if anything, it proves that actually there's almost no such thing as immunity to suicide, that it has to go beyond that. And that's not to do with anyone's failing or anyone falling short. It's about there being other factors in play that we can't control. And I guess you've reflected on that during that time, but because it were... And I'm sure you've had sort of thoughts about how you responded to certain things that he said in that time. Mm. But it would be wrong, wouldn't it, to... You were responding in the way that you thought was best at the time, and you were being his dad. And with the best and the wealth of the knowledge that you had around you, you were doing the right thing. And it wouldn't be right for you to sort of criticise yourself or people around you for that, would it?
No, not at all. And it is something I've been able to reflect on quite a lot, because you do come away with guilt. There's no question, as parents particularly, gosh, you know, as a dad, your job's to protect your kids. Okay, you know, he's 34 years old and arguably not a child, but equally, yeah, you do feel that. But I have been able to reconcile that, and we've had conversations about that within the family. And, you know, to say that you can only really deal with the situation with both the information and the tools you have to hand at that time. You know, say hindsight's brilliant, isn't it? Because now, with the knowledge that I have, I would behave, react, and have very different conversations. But that is one of the reasons why I'm on this mission, to kind of educate and communicate and help people to deal with this much more directly and more effectively. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at Jordan's mum, you know, she had that challenge, didn't she? She's a mental health nurse on the one hand, but she's Jordan's mum on the other. So to what extent does she become a counsellor every time she speaks to her son? You know, you can't do that. And you know, Charlotte living with Jordan equally was in that difficult position, because you have such a close relationship. You don't want to be getting up in the morning and saying, right, well, can we have a chat about your mental health this morning? So it's a very difficult thing to manage, and we all must need to really forget that Charlotte was a psychologist and Julie was the mental health nurse, because they were mother and girlfriend.
In terms of the steps afterwards, I think, you know, people could totally understand if you, either individually or as a collective, wanted to sort of metaphorically huddle down together and just try and battle and find a way through. But relatively quickly, the idea of this legacy with a capital L has sort of emerged. At what point in your mind did that become a thing where you thought, we will be, you know, we will huddle down when we need to huddle down, but also there is something else we can do? How quickly did that idea come about?
Yeah, well, I can tell you very specifically, actually, because I started within a few weeks of George's death journaling, and just a few days ago read my journal for the date. So I can probably assume that's around about January the 17th or 18th, where I'd woken up that morning and I've been thinking and during the night. And the idea for the Jordan effect, as I'd called it at that time, was born. And that was born out of reading an article that is a story actually on the Jordan Legacy website, and a story about a father who lost his son right in front of him, 11-year-old son, I think, at the time, in a cycling accident, got hit by a truck, you know, right in front of him. And his story about the awful period they went through, but out of that, what they've achieved in terms of this incredible website and what they're doing in memory of their son now, that kind of inspired me at that time. And as I say, that would have been about January the 15th, so 6 weeks or so after Jordan's death. So that was the moment, very clearly documented in the journal there. The catalyst in some ways started just a few weeks before that, because my background in consultancy and training was very much centered around social media and the business platform LinkedIn. That's where for 11 years or more people would have known me and had quite a following already at that stage. But I decided to publish an article 6 weeks after Jordan's suicide about the experience that we'd gone through, including dealing with the police, the coroner, and just the nightmare of things that were going on, but also the impact that it had had on us and everybody around Jordan. And I hesitated when I'd written it and got it all ready to press the publish button, because I kind of asked myself that question, why are you doing this? And I think in the end, I thought, well, if my view was pretty clear at that moment, if someone reads this, that's considering doing that and understands the ripple effect that this may have, maybe that'll stop them. I'm kind of a little bit better educated now, 13 months on, to say that that isn't always going to be the case. And it potentially may even have a negative consequence there in terms of guilt. But nevertheless, it did have, to a large extent, the impact I hoped it would do. And I think I, even with my knowledge of LinkedIn, I was taken back by the response globally to that article that I published on December the 16th. And that kind of started the ball rolling, because I was then approached by hundreds of people, really, from private messages to comments that range from people bereaved by suicide, psychologists themselves who kind of thanked me for articulating something that they would often make very wordy and complex, but had really got the message across, to people that were considering taking their own lives or had done, and how this had impacted on them. So the outpouring was huge. And I think once that had happened, knowing I had a voice, but now had a different voice and could maybe make that difference, that's when the journey of starting to write and publish more about our experience then kind of led on within a few weeks to that moment, as I mentioned in the journal, when I thought, right, I need something more specific. And the reason specifically was because I was starting to be approached more and more by people who were struggling. And I thought, I'm not equipped, I'm not a mental health professional. How do I respond? So immediately I was to Jordan's mum and to Charlotte, say, what do I need to put in place? What's my reply? Where do I signpost? What do I do? And as I say, 13 months later, I'm considerably better educated in that respect.
And I think that's sort of testament both to, you know, the commitment that you wanted to make to that, but also the need that people had for an outlet, somebody to speak to. And obviously, clearly through that post, they were able to see a connection and see something that thought, this bloke gets it, this bloke understands what it is, which is a great connection to make. But with those responses, what was it that you thought, well, this is what we do need? Because ultimately, we need to stop people considering taking their own life. We need to get those suicide numbers down to zero. And that is a bold and a correct ambition, I think, that we can all have. But you as an individual must thought, well, what will be the thing that I can do? What will be the thing that when people come to me, I can offer them? And how easy was it to make that decision about what that offer would be?
Yeah, in some ways, looking back, it seems that it was all relatively easy, that it kind of fit into place. But there was a lot happened and has happened during 2020 in our own personal respect, not least what everyone else is going through. I think one of the things that I realized was that because of my openness and pulling no punches, I think, in the content that I shared, I was very open about the emotion, the experience, how it had really impacted. It was very raw, a lot of the content. I think that resonated with a lot of people. There was no fluff there, and it was a very personal story. And we know personal stories sell hugely. So I think that the more that I was just very open, rather than just quoting statistics about mental health and things like that, the more people engaged and still do. Once I decided that we needed some kind of platform to signpost people, increasingly I was being approached by people who had expertise in the world of mental health and suicide prevention. And those conversations started to lead to kind of a small posse, if you like, of people that I'd said, well, you know, where might I take this? You know, I want to do something. I know I need to do something in Jordan's memory now. I need to stop this happening. I think I have a voice. I know I have a voice that's already had that impact in the early days. How do we develop that? And kind of from those thoughts and those conversations, the Jordan Legacy was born. The website was created. Pulling people in, such as Paul Vittles, a very close partner with extensive experience in the zero suicide community globally, came on board, and we started to form this zero suicide community strategy through the Jordan Legacy. And that's grown through December and has kind of culminated really in a launch of an initiative that we're calling Hope for Life UK, which was launched yesterday online. We had over 350 people registered for a Zoom call that had some minor technical difficulties with people getting on, but they've all got a recording today. But was a huge event for us and really the catalyst for our plans for 2021.
Yeah, which takes us on nicely actually to the next stage of the story. When we talk about legacy, this is the name which people will be hearing about over the course of the next 12 months. Just give us a sense there of what Hope for Life UK will aim to achieve throughout that period of time, culminating with that date in December.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're very clear about at the Legacy is that we're not about just talking a good talk. If we consider the fact that the reasons why people choose to take their own lives are complex, we get that. The actual act of suicide itself is a practical act. And where we see our intervention, if you like, and our work is around how do we prevent that practical act. So our focus during the event yesterday was to ask everyone who attended, look, what does kind of hope mean to you? You know, in your deepest, darkest, most difficult times, what does hope mean, and where do you go to, and who do you go to look for hope, and where do you think other people go, and what does hope mean to them? And that was a question we posed. Got a huge response on the chat to that, lots of ideas. But in terms of the practical aspects, what we said really to everybody, and we will be sharing this year and to everyone listening today, is that we recognised that in order to make a significant change to prevent more suicide from happening and move anywhere close to a zero suicide outcome in our communities. And there are case studies out there from Detroit, from Mersey themselves, from Australia, that you can get to in terms of recorded suicides through the NHS, and you know that you can reach that level of people known to the system. If we're going to do that, we need a ground up contribution from communities and businesses. And that's what yesterday and the initiative that we're going to be running through 2021 is all about. It's saying, how would you like to contribute, big or small? You know, whether you just decide I'm going to read a book on mental health and that's my contribution so I understand it better, or maybe I've always wanted to become a mental health first aider, I'm actually going to go and do that. Or whether you run a business and say, we want to introduce a zero suicide plan within our organization, whatever it is, it could be any contribution. And what we're saying to people is, let us know. We'll keep in touch through the Hope for Life UK community hub that we're developing. And the initiative will culminate on December the 4th this year in Hope for Life UK Day, which will happen each year, but there'll be an event each year where we'll celebrate the successes that have happened. And December the 4th, of course, chosen for a very deliberate reason, because that is the day, of course, that Jordan took his own life. So part of the goal is to say, how do we avoid that just being the most depressing day in our lives and turn that around and really make it a day of hope?
You talked before about sort of those conversations you'd had with Jordan. You're obviously aware of the way he would respond in certain circumstances to things you'd say. Have you considered what he would say about what you're achieving now and hoping to achieve in his name?
Yeah, I think he would be proud. A lot of people have said that and said he is proud and looking down. It's odd, isn't it? You kind of hope your kids respect you and like you. And one of the things that was quite surprising and really very emotional for me was the number of his close friends, names I knew of but never really met or met very briefly in his uni days, perhaps, who would tell me stories of how he would talk about me and his family to others, but particularly those stories about myself and what he thought about me. And I had no idea what he ever really thought. And without going into the detail, I can tell you that it was very reassuring and wonderful to hear. So yeah, I think he will be looking down and saying, kind of, good on you, Dad, you're doing the right thing. And it's maybe kind of why I had to do what I did.
I think it's interesting in terms of the work you've done so far, is an element of it is reactive, because you're reacting to the situation and circumstances you found yourself in. But actually, Hopeful Life UK appears to be where you go on the front foot, you become proactive. And I think in a world where it's very easy just to quickly click on a petition, or it's very easy to click like or share or retweet and then think, well, that's me, I've done my bit. What you've talked about there is actually people going beyond that, is actually people taking steps in their own direction, which I think there was an interview I heard with Tom Hanks that resonated with me. And he was talking about one of the characters he played in a film. And he spoke of the issue of what the world needs is aggressive kindness, which is not just that people are nice and people, but actually people are aggressively kind, that you go out of your way to do something that's a little bit different. And if people are rejectful of that, then it's on you to pursue them almost even further. This idea of aggressive kindness. And that really stuck with me as a thing in a world which can be bleak for many different reasons.
I'm smiling because if you look over my shoulder and your viewers can see from another Tom Hanks film, a character and a very powerful quote that his character Chuck Nolans makes at the end of Castaway, and you know, to remember that quote where Chuck Nolans had lost everything, having been cast away in this desert island, come back and lost his girlfriend yet again, his fiance, and he, you know, he said, kind of, what do you do now? And he said, well, look, I just know that, you know, tomorrow, you know, I'll wake up, I just have to breathe, because who knows what the tide is going to bring in. And I thought, wow, what a quote. So Wilson sits over my left shoulder, keeping an eye. I mean, it's a film that Jordan and I watched a lot and both really enjoy. But you're right. I'll be very careful what I say here. There are a lot of excellent events put on around mental health each year, and certain days, of course, so no, I won't mention them. But what happens is it's a day and everyone gets kind of G'd up and motivated and we must do something. And then nothing really happens to the level it should. So one of the things we're really clear with for Hope for Life UK is that it is an initiative that culminates in Hope for Life UK Day, not just a day that we're waiting to happen. And that is a really important message.
And I think that's a really important one too. Somebody emailed me this week actually saying, Bick, I really like what you do as much as anything, because you do it every week. You don't just do it on the days that, you know, that come up in the diary. Although I do find that sometimes when those dates come round, there's a greater interest in something that you might. So if you can utilize those days. There was a big fuss last week, going off on a tangent slightly here, about Blue Monday, which is, quote, the most depressing day of the year. And it isn't, and it wasn't, and it was a sales thing. But actually, a lot of people use that as a day now to talk about things around the positivities, checking in with their mental health. And actually, I think, well, whatever the hook that people need to get into a subject, I think it's completely validated, whether it's something you see on ITV on a Saturday night or whether it's something you see on a hashtag, then great. But as you quite rightly say, I think what you need then is there needs to be a body or a weight and a resource behind that, so that you don't just get hooked in, briefly deal with a matter or briefly consider a matter, and then think, and now I'll forget about this until this time next year. That's not what we need. It needs, as you say, to be that culmination. It needs to be built around something, be it the signposting, be it proactive steps, be it something that you or your community can get involved in. And it's clear to me that that's what Hopeful Life UK is very much intending to do.
Yeah, I mean, Children in Need do something very similar, don't they? The event is on a certain night, but the whole build-up to it is some months ahead, and everyone goes out and does their fundraising. So very similar principle.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Now, in terms of people who are thinking, oh, maybe this is something I can get involved in, what are people's options now in terms of becoming part of the movement? They might be thinking, well, I don't know Steve, or I've not heard of the Jordan Legacy before, but this sounds like something that we can be part of or that we can benefit from. What would you say to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, we have the website, which is the jordanlegacy.com. I'm very cognizant of the fact that this morning I have a project to do fairly rapidly, and that is to get some very clear reference to Hope for Life UK on there. As you can imagine, these things kind of happen, take on a mind of their own, and before you know it, it's happened. So that will be happening pretty quickly this morning, something fairly clear and obvious on the page there. On there will be a link also for people to opt into our Hope for Life UK community. What that will provide is an opportunity for them to be updated about the project itself, the initiative this year, but we will also be providing a community hub where people can contribute their ideas. I mean, just as examples, I had messages from people after the event last night. A local solicitor that I know said, you know, I've already been thinking about what can we do as a solicitor to help prevent suicide. And this lady said, look, I'm a mediator. It's what I deal and specialize in. And I have fathers who are coming in, going through a divorce, thinking they're going to lose the kids, and in quite precarious emotional conditions. Maybe what we can do as solicitors is part of that mediation, ensure that we have some kind of safeguarding within that process. And, you know, it's already people were coming out with ideas like that. So the Hope for Life community will be with a little bit of guidance from ourselves, but really important to understand is that we want people to contribute with their ideas, not for us to impose our ideas onto them. So we can help in a lot of cases, but what does hope mean to you? What would giving hope to someone else look like as far as you're concerned in a community, a work, a family environment? Share your ideas. Let's put together, you know, this plan and this initiative through the contributions of ordinary everyday folk. And if we do that, we can create, you know, a fantastic movement that has a real measurable impact on saving lives and preventing suicide.
But isn't that a really strong and powerful message there, that actually no matter what it is that you do, no matter who you are, with a little bit of thinking, you can find your little niche, your little thing, your little difference that allows you to be part of that. And actually, and you've put hope at the center of that, and the word hope, because I think that resonates with people, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a seed that was sowed with me by Paul, I mentioned earlier, joined the organisation and is working closely with the Legacy, and said, you know, he just first sowed that seed about December the 4th, which, you know, that first anniversary was a really tough day. And each 4th of the month leading up to that was as a family. And he first suggested about, could we turn around how you mark that day in any way and create any kind of hope out of it? He said, because I think absolutely everything we do has to end on a note of hope. Whatever the tough subject is we're talking about, and suicide is not an easy subject, is that we've got to end each conversation on a message of hope. Because without hope, there's no point even tackling the subject and talking about it. There has to be some kind of hope.
Well, let's end our conversation by talking about hope then, Steve. And often I find that hope comes from the community that you find through difficult circumstances. And I know that there are many people who speak very, very warmly of the work that you're doing. You know, the response that you heard from social media. Have you found that community, that mental health aware community, to be something which, you know, you can, that's part of your life now? As you look to build on Jordan's legacy?
Yeah, I think I was asked on another event I was speaking at yesterday, a panel discussion, what surprised me most this year about people. Firstly, it surprised me just how many people are going through this, both bereaved by suicide, struggling with ideation and struggling with mental health generally. It's just something I wasn't aware of. But just how many amazing people, really seriously, people working very hard. We have a very fragmented still mental health support network, I think, throughout the UK, but increasingly that is changing. The great organisations like the Hub of Hope, for example, and set up by Jake and Chasing the Stigma, who, you know, you can go onto the Hub of Hope now and type in your postcode, and that will take you to localised support for mental health. You know, simple idea, but we're starting to see lots of things like this coming together. So the community is growing. I think there is a need for more alignment, for sure, of that, because I still think a lot of people are struggling or uncertain where to go other than phone the Samaritans. And then that is really more at the crisis end. And they are overwhelmed, I know, with the number of calls that they get. I just think I'm buoyed really by, you know, the just wonderful messages of support, but also just to see other people out there doing great, great things. And just one final note on that, I, you know, had a conversation with a young lady, she won't mind me mentioning a name, called Alice Hendy. Young lady, I would think in her late 20s, so be careful what I say to her there, but lost her son, her brother Josh, age 21, on November the 25th, very recent. She got in touch with me because her background is in cybersecurity and IT. And last weekend she was having a meeting with Google, having just had one with Samaritans, because she has created a tool which aligns to web browsers to pop up a kind of message of hope and a warning and resources whenever specific keywords are entered into a browser. She's called it Ripple, for the Ripple effect. It's based on the fact that she managed to check Josh's internet history and he was researching methods of suicide on there. And although this is maybe not a new concept, no one's done it quite like Alice is proposing. And you think November the 25th, she lost her brother. And here we are in January. She's already got a detailed, in-depth proposal and meetings with Google and Samaritans who are really interested in the work she's doing. So many amazing people, you know, out of pretty tragic circumstances, you know, just trying to make a difference. And the more that we can pull these communities together to work, you know, toward this common goal, the better, really, Mick.
Absolutely. Steve, Philip, thank you so much for your time today. TheJordanLegacy.com, the website that people can go to. Steve, by the time people are hearing this, you'll have turned that website around. It'll be Hopeful Life UK singing and dancing.
I'd better run off and get a coffee and do that now.
I'll tell you, well, what I'll say to people, if they click on it today and it's not there, give Steve another week and then he'll certainly have had it turned around.
Give me a day, one day.
Thank you so much for your time, Steve. A real pleasure. And I know you've been through such a difficult time, you know, but we focus on the hope and what you hope to achieve. Fingers crossed that everyone else can play their part and it can really galvanize those who want to be the difference and make a difference in other people's lives. So thanks for joining us on this week's Mental Health Monday.
Thank you, Mick. Really appreciate the invitation.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.